And host Per Fogring will be welcoming today Brazilian roving correspondent Pepe Escobar, talking about the Brazilian political earthquake. That's coming up right after this on KBOO. By the way, it takes all of us to keep KBOO strong. Did you know you can give gifts of stocks to KBOO? We are able to quickly turn these donations into support for the important daily work of KBOO. How do you do this? Call 503-231-8032 or email development@kboo.org for information on how to make a stock gift or a gift of appreciated securities. Thank you.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the film screening of Firefighters, Architects, Engineers, Expose 9/11 Myths on Saturday, April 2nd, at the Portland State University Lincoln Performance Center in Portland. The film will be introduced by Richard Gage, founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. There will also be a Q&A session after the film. Again, that's a screening of the film, Firefighters, Architects, Engineers, Expose 9/11 Myths with Richard Gage, Saturday, April 2nd, at the Portland State University Lincoln Performance Center, 1620 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fogring, and the show is Fight the Empire. And my guest should be Pepe Escobar, who's been on before. He's a roving correspondent for various journals, and we are trying to get hold of him. He is in Paris right now, but we are trying to get hold of him. But he's written a couple articles about what's going on in Brazil. It's really kind of amazing. The first article a few days ago was called The Brazilian Earthquake. And this was written for the is a Russian news site called Sputnik. Anyway, the gist of the article was that former President Luiz da Silva, also known as Lula, was kind of arrested and taken away for 4 hours of interrogation and charged with some form of corruption. And now it's kind of amazing that not too long ago he was Brazil's most popular president, very popular around the world. He's kind of a working class guy who became president of one of the big countries in the world. And he was, I believe, one of the founders of the Workers' Party of Brazil. And he was kind of dragged off for interrogation and charged with these crimes. And then what happened after that was that the president, Dilma Rousseff, who is very unpopular in Brazil now and is sort of the target of some kind of impeachment proceedings, she appointed him to be sort of the chief of her cabinet. And what this does, it kind of puts him beyond the scope of this one investigation, although apparently it does not put him beyond a Supreme Court investigation. But it does put him in, it kind of takes some of the pressure off him. And the gist of Pepe's article was that one thing he says that the original testimony, the original charges against him, the accusations, I don't know if they actually were official charges yet or not, but they were based on a sort of plea bargain testimony. Some guy who was in trouble for corruption and was persuaded or decided or whatever to make these accusations or back up these accusations against Lula. And what Pepe Escobar was writing about was that this was seen as a move by the right wing in Brazil, which is still pretty powerful. Okay, we have Pepe Escobar online. Good morning, Pepe.
Hi, how you doing?
Oh, pretty good. How's the weather in Paris?
Well, it's today's sun. It's a beautiful day. It's almost spring.
Oh, my. Well, same here. We got a cold morning, but it's sunny. The rain has stopped for a while. But I was kind of filling in people on your two articles about Lula. So why don't we just sort of go into that? Where does this car wash name come from?
Look, this is it's an extremely messy story. In fact, I opened my last article. Published on RT yesterday with a House of Cards metaphor, which the BBC stole today, this morning. It's much more complicated than House of Cards because it's an investigation that started 2 years ago, roughly, about, let's say, a criminal cell inside Petrobras, the state oil company, and it was in direct connection with the contract obtained to major Brazilian construction companies, and some sort of money laundering. There was a financing politician, especially from the Workers' Party. It's an extremely complicated story. It involves basically lobbyists working with Petrobras. And the problem is it developed with a political agenda from the beginning. It was instrumentalized by the right in Brazil to go against Dilma's government, and obviously what happened a few days ago, to try to implicate Lula as well. And it's not by accident that this whole thing started more or less at the same time of the latest Brazilian presidential elections, end of 2014. So this is at the time, we were already more or less sure that the right, that lost the polls, will do everything to win what we call the outside of the field in Brazilian football jargon, you know, like some sort of a judge would rule. And that's exactly what's happening, because this judge in charge of the car wash investigation, which is a federal judge, but from one of São Paulo's southern states, it's not based in a financial center and business center of the country, São Paulo, or in the capital, Brasilia, or in Rio. And he was inspired by the Clean Hands money police investigation in Italy during the 1999, which ended up more or less cleaning up the political chessboard in Italy. But the result was the ascension of Berlusconi. So we're not going to have a Berlusconian scenario in Brazil, but judge himself, he's behaving in a very Berlusconian, authoritarian way. And what happened these past, especially these last 24 hours after Lula was appointed as a sort of super prime minister of Brazil, is absolutely crazy, because he's overstepping his jurisdiction and he's releasing bugged conversations of the president of Brazil's personal phone, in fact, to the media. And this is illegal and inconstitutional, for that matter. and many other steps of during the car wash investigation were illegal and constitutional, and basically relying on very, very dodgy characters, racking out other dodgy characters to the prosecutors. So, you know, House of Cards pales in comparison to the... Because this involves a political system in a country that is totally corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
Government, opposition, left, right, doesn't matter, you know.
Well, you wrote in your article that that they've been, tapping Lula's telephone. How long has that been going on? The investigation's been going on for a while. Have they been eavesdropping on him all these years, or what's going on there?
They have been eavesdropping on the president for a long time. And don't forget the genesis of the whole operation, which was the template for the whole operation, came from the NSA spying on Brazil. The NSA, as WikiLeaks revealed, they were bugging Dilma's personal cell phone, not only the phones in Brasília at her office, and were bugging a lot of people at Petrobras itself. A lot of Judge Sergio Moro, the federal judge responsible for the car wash investigation. And this was more or less the genesis of the whole operation. Problem is, because the whole thing is so politicized, and because Judge Moro, he has been applying the money politics textbook to the letter, which basically to get mainstream media on his side, so he releases confidential information and leaks confidential stuff to the Brazilian corporate media on a daily basis, practically. And a lot of this stuff is extremely controversial because it's innuendo, it's hearsay, it's people ratting out with no actual proof and no document. And what he did yesterday was even worse because he bugged the president. He released the conversation, implying, and to listen to the, I actually listened to the conversation between Dilma and Lula. There's nothing to prove that he was appointed because he was running away from justice or from the longer hand of car wash investigation. But this is what the judge himself implied when he released this information. It's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. It's basically a white coup in progress in Brazil. It's a very, very serious matter for the whole developing world and for every functioning vital democracy. Brazil is a very, very healthy democracy, but it's been compromised now by the way parts of the judicial system in Brazil allied with the corporate media and allied with right wing and the usual suspects' interests. That's what I'm talking about. You read the coverage of, for instance, Bloomberg, Wall Street Journal, the way they are covering the crisis in Brazil, they are in fact are rooting for regime change.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a judicial form of regime change. It's one of the most sophisticated regime change operations in modern history, in fact.
Does this mean that NSA, so it looks like NSA is spying on governments all around the world, and if they get something they think they can use, they pass it on to their friends wherever they may be?
Yes, absolutely. And sometimes we wonder if the NSA was not involved in the first place, whether all this information that the car wash presents had in the first place would be available, in fact, because it's not selective. Everybody would have to be implicated, not only the government. All the parties, center parties that are aligned with the Workers' Party in governing Brazil, ruling coalition Brazil at the moment, and the whole of the opposition, which basically most of them social democrats that are neoliberals. Everybody is implicated in corruption in Brazil. And the system is not as sophisticated as the U.S., where you have a K Street lobbies doing all the dirty work in Washington. In Brazil, it's more blatant and it's more crude and raw than that. But it's more or less the same thing. It's more or less the same thing. So if the judges were really interested in finally stamping out corruption out of the Brazilian system, everybody would have to be investigated.
There wouldn't be anybody left.
And
who'd be left?
And the people they really want is Dilma and Lula. because Lula is a very powerful symbol, not only around the world, very well respected all over the world, but inside Brazil, he is a myth, he's an icon. So they need to destroy the myth and the icon if they are able to win the next elections in 2017, 2018. It's really, really, it's a very, very high-stakes power game. In fact, this guy's as fight against corruption.
Well, you mentioned that, I read this this morning on the news, there was a another big protest, but at the end of the at the end of the article, it said that opposition politicians are also booed by these protesters.
Absolutely, this is what happened in the protest this past Sunday. Two top opposition politicians, including the guy that lost the last presidential elections, and it's the president of the PSDB, which is the former Social Democrats in Brazil, they went to one of these, in fact, the largest demonstration in São Paulo, and they were booed out of the demonstration by thousands, tens of thousands of people, in fact. And not only this was in itself proof that they know that they are as corrupt as when the government is not more corrupt, they are being dropped completely by the media system as well. The media system is trying to find other heroes for them. And for the moment, the big hero is Judge Moro. They're trying to elevate Judge Moro to the condition of an ex-presidential contender, in fact. But It's also very funny. They ran a poll, a very respected poll, the past 24-48 hours, and still the most popular politician in Brazil, even with all these problems, is still Lula. Whatever you do, he's still extremely popular because he's very popular with the majority of the Brazilian population. He helped during his 8 years in power.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned that the economy is in a very deep recession, but so are economies all over the world. So it's, this whole world is going into recession, and you can just, people get tired of whatever party's in power and they vote for the other, and then they screw things up and you go back and forth. Somehow they're missing the cause of this global recession.
No, and people in Brazil, they don't understand. Most people, they're basically worried about their own survival. They don't follow international news. Mm-hmm. They don't compare the recession in Brazil with the global recession, in fact. And that's a huge problem. The extra problem was the Dilma government economically was an absolute mess. She is incompetent to run the country as a stateswoman. Lula was a statesman. And he understood economics and finance very, very well. In fact, Wall Street loved Lula while he was in power. And everybody should remember that. There was a wealth redistribution in Brazil, but at the same time, the economy was working. Businessmen were, investment was at an all-time high. The problem is that this was before the 2008 crisis, and the government survived a little bit of the 2008 crisis until 2011. The problem is they had a one-track development model, which was to rely on export of commodities. They would have to diversify. Brazil would have to export more manufactured products. They would have to invest heavily on education so they could go up the ladder in high-tech manufacturing. So this was, according to Lula himself, this would be his long-term goal, more investment in education and in technical education. The first 8 years was to try to sanitize a basic problem, which was to get millions of people, as many as 30 million, perhaps 40 million, out of poverty and into the lower middle class. And he managed to achieve that, which is huge, by any measure. The problem is an extra problem, the lack of cadres, high-quality cadres in the Workers' Party. And this is directly tied to the extreme problems affecting the Brazilian educational system, primary, secondary, university. So what he did in 8 years was something that was never done in the history of Brazil for at least 450. So you can imagine the challenge. And Dilma was not up to it after that. She's basically, sort of local manager. she cannot manage a country as complex as Brazil, especially because she doesn't listen to some of the best Brazilian economists, for instance.
Well, is there any...
There's national concerns, and there's also the national problems together.
Well, is there any connection with this kind of economic plan and, say, the logging in the Amazon, which I understand is still going on?
Exactly. And the Amazon, there's the story of the protection of the Amazon as well. And there are two interlinked major security questions for Brazil. How to protect the Amazon and sustainable development for the Amazon rainforest, and how to protect the Brazilian coastline, and how to protect the Brazilian salt deposits. The most important oil discovery in the 21st century so far. And that's an extra reason that takes us to foreign meddling in everything that's going on in Brazil at the moment. Don't forget that the sole explorer of pre-salt deposits, it's Petrobras, the Brazilian state oil company. American Big Oil, Chevron, ExxonMobil, they tried very hard, but they were sidelined. And this was when Lula was in power. So don't forget that the long arm of Uncle Sam has a serious, serious problem against Lula personally.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to factor this into account as well.
Well, that's pretty expensive oil, though, isn't it? I mean, it's under the ocean, it's under these salt deposits. I mean, that's going to be very expensive oil to get out of there.
Yes, but it was discovered by Petrobras, their own technology. And it's surefire. If you perforate a pre-salt well somewhere, you're guaranteed to find oil. This doesn't happen anywhere else in the world. And this was done with local Brazilian technology only. Nobody else has this kind of technology. So in the end, it's going to be profitable. That's the long term. So, you know, I would say that Brazil's wealth in long term relies on profits from the pre-salt deposit exploration. This is not something that was going to spend 2, 3, 5 years ago. We're going to see it at the end of the 2020s. And nobody has long-term vision. And in the opposition, for instance, they don't have this long-term vision. Lula and some very key people around them, they had it and they still have it.
What about...
What
is the status of... How is land reform going in Brazil? You know, there is a landless peasants movement. Are they making any headway?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the question properly.
I'm talking about land reform. You know, you had this landless farmers movement, and, you know, they've been active.
The landless peasants movement. It's one of the most active in the whole world. And as much as they did not agree with many of Lula's policies, they were part of his base, more or less. Now, with Lula back in power, one of his key objectives, in fact, for the first few weeks, is to reconnect with what they call all their bases. And that includes the landless peasant movement, not only workers all over Brazil, urban workers, this workers in a social mobility process, but the landless peasant movement is very, very important as well. And because Lula is a master negotiator, which Dilma is not, by the way, he's probably the only person in Brazil who can reagglutinate the bases and reagglutinate the Workers' Party and other parties' enormous popular social base. And this is something that the right is absolutely scared of, because if he managed to do that, he's going to be back as president in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it for the right in Brazil, really. Mm-hmm.
What about, not too long ago, we were reading about the drought in Sao Paulo. Has that been alleviated, or is it still going on? How are things there?
It's not going on as much by now, because in Brazil there's a phenomenon of what they call the March rains, in fact. It rains a lot in March. That's the end of the Brazilian summer, in fact. And, reservoirs are more or less replenished. And this is what's happening This is what's been happening, in fact, for the past few weeks. But this is an infrastructure problem that was not tackled before, and especially in the case of the São Paulo state, which is the wealthiest state in São Paulo, with a standard of living that's practically comparable to a wealthy state in the U.S., tackled by the right-wing government, in fact. The government of the state of São Paulo is an opposition right-wing government, and they never cared about it, and they could have found solutions like were found in New York, for instance, building extra reservoirs, you know, basically rivers, you name it. They didn't.
Well,
the people who live in São Paulo, they know this very well, mm-hmm. And they still keep supporting the opposition, even though it's...
Do you have any? You care to guess what's going to happen next? I mean, what's what lies ahead? This investigation keeps on going.
It's absolutely impossible. Like I told you, this is House of Cards. You can have an idea what happens next, or even Breaking Bad at the same time, but not with this. In fact, now it's total war. From one side, we have the Workers' Party and trying to connect with their social base all over the world. So that means poor Brazilians, working class Brazilians, and the new lower middle class. And on the other side, a very, very powerful economic, financial, media, parts of the judiciary complex, which is extremely powerful. They monopolize the airwaves, for that matter. You only find accurate information about what's really going on in Brazil on the net, and the net in Brazil is very, very strong, and the quality of journalism on the net in Brazil is extremely high and detailed. So now it's total war. We don't know. It will largely depend on what Lula will be able to accomplish in Brasilia itself with his political articulation. And he's very good at that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know...
In the next, months or 40 days, nothing happens. The media, economic, financial, right-wing complex is going to invest heavily in an impeachment of Dilma Rousseff. It's a process that's still already on. And the shortcut, or this roadmap, would be something like 45 days. So the next 45 days are essential. The destiny of Brazil in the near future is being played right now. Right?
Well, you know, I've heard that Brazil is one of the most unequal countries in the world, and it looks to me like the right wing wants to keep it that way.
Absolutely, Bert. Absolutely. In fact, you cannot understand Brazil, which is a country, in terms of natural wealth, is one of the wealthiest countries in the world. It could be by now the fourth largest economic power in the world and not the seventh. It's not basically because of mismanagement and because of inequality. And this inequality, you have to go back to the history of Brazil to understand why. So it's the basic, very basic reasons. The way Portuguese colonialism worked,
mm-hmm.
A slave-owning mentality. In fact, there was a genocide of the indigenous population, just like in the U.S. as well. But especially slavery. Slavery rested in Brazil for 300 years, more or less. It was the last country in the Americas to abolish slavery at the end of the century. And the people who ruled Brazil, these families, there used to be 50 families. Now we can say nowadays it's maybe, 200 families or so who actually rule a country of 104 million people. They have a slave-owning mentality. It's like if you're watching a Tarantino movie, in fact. Everybody else has to obey them, and they are like plantation owners in the U.S. in the 19th century. It's exactly the same thing.
Well, I think we're going to have to leave.
Very, very serious. And permeates all social relations in the country. That's what's so serious.
Well, I think we're going to have to leave it there. This is an ongoing story, and we're going to try and keep on top of it. Thank you very much. We're talking to Pepe Escobar from Brazil, but a roving correspondent around the world. Where can we see your articles? Where can we look up your articles?
Yes, look, I'm out of Asia Times since last year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm writing for RT, Sputnik City Culture Foundation.
Okay.
Russia. In the U.S., I write for Tom Dispatch. I'm usually republished by Counterpunch and Information Clearinghouse in the U.S. as well.
Okay.
So my articles can be easily found on the net.
Tom Dispatch, Counterpunch, Sputnik, and RT. You got a whole lot of places to go to. Thank you very much for being with us. We'll talk some more in the future,
thanks.
I think.
My pleasure, sir. Thank
okay,
you
okay, have a good day. And stay tuned for Air Cascadia.
That's right, Air Cascadia coming right up on KBOO Portland. Also coming up this morning at 10:15, join us for Flashpoints, more on the brutal assassination of Nelson Garcia, an indigenous rights leader in Honduras and member of the same rights group as slain activist Berta Cáceres. Also, in an in-depth follow-up report on the continuing dangers of the world faces of Fukushima. And at 11 on Between the Covers, host David Naiman interviews writer Leila Lalami about the Moor's account, her imagined memoirs of the first black explorer of America, a Moroccan slave whose testimony was left out of the official record. But up next, it's Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. Hey, thanks KBOO members for your generous support. If you are not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate to today.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Lady Aoi, produced by Imago Theater. The play runs from March 11th through the 27th at the Imago Theater in Portland. Set in a hospital in 1956, the Lady Aoi is an erotic ghost story written by Yuki Mashima based on a 15th century Noho play. Again, that's the Lady Aoi, March 11th through March 27th at the Imago Theater, 17 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side.